Schaefer and Maya Shonan. We're here for the very special two-hour program. We're going to have a conversation with Richard Gage in the American Institute of Architects, a member, an architect, and an architect for over 20 years who became disturbed by the collapse of the Twin Towers and World Trade Center, Building 7 collapse. He became disturbed by the information that he heard in a lecture by David Ray Griffin, an interview, and he then started to investigate. And as an architect with over 20 years of experience designing high-rise buildings and schools and other complicated structures, Richard engaged with other architects and engineers, and together they formed Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. But most importantly, what Richard did was put together a methodical presentation of how the destruction of the Twin Towers and WTC-7 were not caused by fire, but were the result of controlled demolition. You know what that means, folks? Everything we've been saying ever since 9/11. Ralph?
Well, Maya, what Richard Gage has done, and it's an extraordinary achievement here, is to galvanize across the United States engineers and architects of great distinction to join in an effort to expose the realities about the government involvement inexorably through the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center. Unless the laws of physics were reversed on that day, the collapse of the towers cannot be ascribed hydrocarbon fire, let alone to the temporary impact of jet planes penetrating the surface or skin of those structures. The collapse virtually on their own footprint, a collapse at the rate of gravity, has no basis in attribution to a hydrocarbon fire, and the work of Richard Gage, methodical, systematic, devastating in its visual impact and in its evidentiary accumulation, leaves no mistake in anybody's mind about what are the actual underlying dynamics of the treason at the top that defines the events of September 11th, 2001.
You have to recall that the official fiction encapsulated in the FEMA report states, quote, "It was the combination of the impact load followed by the fire that caused the collapse." But as you will hear today, on Taking Aim, when we play excerpts from Richard Gage's lecture at the University of Manitoba, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, and also when we have our interview and presentation with Richard Gage live here on WBAI, you will see that as he concludes, you too will conclude, no building that has the aspects of controlled demolition, Richard concludes, has ever not been a controlled demolition. It's obvious. If it doesn't look like a duck, if it doesn't talk like a duck, it's going to rust.
Yes.
You don't like my joke.
No, joke is not the issue, Maya. The analogy is fine, but the point being here that the evidence is indisputable, and unless the laws of physics were reversed that day, the huge steel supports of this giant high-rise building and the massive concrete did not respectively dissolve into liquid, molten liquid and pulverized powder from a hydrocarbon fire. No hydrocarbon fire ever in the history of structures has produced that effect or caused the collapse of a high-rise building.
So let's go today, and I'd like to remind you of the phone number to call. 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950. This is a two-hour presentation by Richard Gage, methodical, with a complete PowerPoint media presentation that you can see graphically and really well. And he walks you through the controlled demolition of World Trade Center 7 and also the Twin Towers. He completely demolishes the official fiction with the physical evidence. And this is 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, 212-209-2950 for your contribution of $75 to keep WBAI Broadcasting. Ralph?
Well, Maya, as Richard in his very important website makes clear, he says, take an architect to lunch. Look at the evidence that is manifested in this extraordinary presentation and DVD. Watch for yourself the rapid onset of collapse. Hear for yourselves the sounds of explosion at a full second prior to the collapse. See the flashes and the squibs, the mistimed explosions, 40 floors below the collapsing building, visible in the videos. Watch the mid-air pulverization of 90,000 tons of concrete and steel decking, filing cabinets, and thousands of people into dust. Massive volumes of expanding pyroclastic dust clouds. See for yourselves, brothers and sisters, the vertical progression of the full building perimeter of demolition waves. Watch the symmetrical collapse through the path of greatest resistance at nearly free-fall speed. These are the evidence, the massive evidence, before your eyes.
Now let's go to the DVD. We're coming in 7-8 minutes into the DVD so that you can hear for yourself about the World Trade Center Building 7 collapse.
Buildings are destroyed by a number of different forces, each having very different identifiable characteristics. For instance, fires affect building differently than controlled demolition and explosions. Fires, by their nature, tend to creep from place to place as they run out of fuel and find fresh fuel sources, leaving behind the burned-out area to cool. Now, when collapses do occur, and they have never in a high-rise office building, but, for instance, in wood buildings, they begin gradually and asymmetrically with large, visible, slow deformations. So remember this. Controlled demolition we'll be taking a very close look at. When buildings topple, as in earthquakes like this, their mass tends to hold together. They don't pulverize to concrete. When buildings pancake, like this concrete building in an earthquake in Mexico, you tend to see a whole lot of pancakes on the bottom. We'll be looking for those pancakes when we get to the World Trade Center. And when buildings explode, we see flashes of light, visible streamers, lots and lots of explosive smoke, and dust from pulverized concrete. These buildings fell over or collapsed. They tend to hang together. They don't pulverize to dust. They follow the path of least resistance. They don't fall straight down through themselves and turn to dust. Note the thick, dense, billowing, and enormous clouds with explosions. The shooting streamers, flashes of light. We'll be looking for these elements in all three World Trade Center high-rise collapses. This one on the lower right looks just like the Twin Towers, but it is not. It is an acknowledged explosion. We'll be comparing it to the Twin Towers. Let's focus on controlled demolition first. We have hundreds of examples of controlled demolition from all across the country from which to make our comparison to Building 7, because it's the most commonly used method to bring high-rise buildings down or demolish them. This is what a high-rise looks like when it's being demolished. Controlled demolitions can be engineered in many different ways. Normally, the purpose of a controlled demolition is to remove a structure while avoiding damage to adjacent structures and to do so economically. Typically, a tall building is demolished by placing thousands of cutter charges adjacent to columns and beams throughout the building, and then detonating them in precise order, starting with the interior structure and then progressing outward and upward, synchronistically timed floor by floor. Destroying the interior columns allows the unsupported weight to pull the exterior inward, and destroying the building from the ground up allows the weight of the building to be harnessed to do much of the destruction. The result is an implosion, producing a vertical collapse at free fall speed into a consolidated rubble pile, which is broken up and ready for loading and shipment. This is what we see in all three of the World Trade Center high-rise buildings, and we'll take a close look. Now, this is a feat that only a handful of companies in the world can accomplish. And we're told that fire accomplished exactly this for the first time ever on 9/11. So what are the typical features of these of controlled demolitions? Well, we have direct evidence of explosives, starting with sounds produced by explosions, rapid onset of destruction at the base, dust clouds, thick, billowing, and enormous, pulverized concrete. We have evidence of cutter charges. We have squibs or explosive cutter charges visible at the upper floors, demolition waves which remove column support, and a total collapse of the steel skeleton broken up and ready for shipment. In addition to this direct evidence, well, the result of all of this is a straight down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint, where, because all columns are cut on a floor at once, synchronistically timed, resulting in a free fall speed of collapse. So we'll be comparing these features to Building 7 right away here, one by one. In addition, we have no typical characteristics of destruction by fire, the large, slow deformations, the creeping from place to place, the asymmetrical collapse of any structure that is destroyed by fire. But also, we have government documentation, which we'll be looking at in the case of Building 7, expert corroboration. Do controlled demolition experts say that this was a controlled demolition in the case of Building 7? Do we have foreknowledge of the collapse? Well, we always know when controlled demolitions, they're planned months in advance. Turns out in Building 7, we'll be finding foreknowledge. We have plenty of video documentation, all of which goes to support the hypothesis of controlled demolition, which turns out to be quite easy. So let's see if Building 7 has any of these features. Well, Building 7 is this tall 47-story skyscraper. How many of you have never heard of Building 7? Usually there's a whole bunch of people. Most of Americans have not. It's 47 stories. It was never hit by an airplane. It suffered some damage by the North Tower when it came down. And we'll see what happened to it. It's about a football field length away from the North Tower on the other side of Building 6. You can see Building 7 here in the aftermath, after the Twin Tower, North Tower, came down. So here's the building in its pristine condition and then being pelted during the collapse of the North Tower. We'll be taking a look at all of this dust coming up in a moment. Now here we have a shadow of this building on Building 7. Remember, 47 stories, so don't get confused by the shadow line above the fires. There are two or three fairly small fires, which is the only graphic evidence we have of fires in this building. There's smoke on the other side, and there's some dispute whether that was part of the Building 7 on fire or another building behind it. So we have two small fires, never hit by a plane, random damage from the Twin Towers. So let's march our way through the evidence here, and you can follow along in your handout to see where we are and how we're doing. Let's take a look at CBS video and listen to Dan Rather.
What you're seeing are high shots. Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
Amazing,
incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen
too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
I want to show you this again because I want to refer your attention to the penthouse, which falls first, indicating core column damage.
What you're seeing are high shots. Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
Even Dan can pick up the obvious comparison to controlled demolition. Let's take a look at the NBC, and he never repeated that statement again, by the way. How does this happen? We have 24 core and 57 perimeter columns around this building. What could make all 81 of these columns fail simultaneously so that the building would collapse straight down, rapidly, symmetrically, in 6.5 seconds? How is that possible? Since the small fires and the damaged columns were only on one side, we're told by NIST and FEMA that the columns were damaged on this side, we're looking at the other side. Wouldn't we expect, for instance, if I broke my leg and I was going to fall toward the injury, that the building would do the same? No. The only way to do this is to take out all the columns at once. Now, this is an unusual building. It was built over a Con Edison substation, so there were some large spans spanning across the Con Edison, some trusses, cantilevered beams, and so forth, which would make it even more vulnerable if one of those supporting elements, a column or a truss, were to go down in a fire, which, remember, is not all the way around the building uniformly heating all those columns up at once. No. The building would fall over, favor one side. Let's take a look, finally, at the north side on West Street. Okay, now, watch this. What do you see in the upper right corner? Anybody? You see four explosions. We're going to be taking a close look at those. There's no fire engulfing this building. There is no fire alleged to have been on those upper floors either. Watch them. Okay, we'll take a closer. Coming right up. Do we have sounds and sights of explosions in Building 7? Let's listen to an interview with this emergency worker.
We were lost in the building actually because it was on fire. The bottom floors of the building was on fire. And, you know, we heard this sound. It sounded like a clap of thunder. Turned around, we were shocked to see that the building was, well, it looked like there was a shockwave moving through the building and the windows all busted out. And, you know, it was horrifying. Then, you know, about a second later, the bottom floor caved out. And the building followed after that, and we saw the building crash down all the way to the ground. You know, we were in shock.
A shock wave ripping through the building, windows busting out, and then the building coming down. Craig Bartner of the New York Fire Department.
And the whole time you hear him thum, 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 thum. So, I think I know an explosion when I hear it, you know? I was real close to Building 7 when it fell down. And running away from that sucked.
Incredible dust flow you're seeing right now. I want you to watch that very carefully. It's the only evidence we have of this massive pyroclastic pulverized concrete and pyroclastic flow or heat-induced cauliflower-like expansion of the dust that we can see in Building 7, which is direct evidence of explosives.
That's one of the things that I live with all the time. And I don't know, but that didn't sound like just the building falling down to me while I was running away from it. out of eyewitness testimony down there hearing explosions. I didn't see any reason for that building to fall down the way it did. And a lot of guys should be saying the same thing.
This is why I do not argue with structural engineers about fires and what they can and can't do to steel. 90% of our evidence is not attacking the NIST report or the FEMA report, but showing the evidence of demolition, which is undeniable. Let's look at what fire does, though, to the building. Because the New York Times cited that experts said no building like it, a modern steel-framed high-rise, had ever collapsed due to fire. And fireproofing is intended to protect a building for 2 or 3 hours at the most. And even then, buildings have never collapsed in a fire of any duration, that is, high-rise steel-frame buildings. Even though, for instance, in these fires, numerous examples of which they burned for well over 3 hours, in this case, Caracas, 17 hours over 26 floors, did the building collapse? No. Los Angeles, 3.5 hours over 5 floors. Did the building collapse? No. Philadelphia, Meridian Plaza, 18 hours over 8 floors. Did it collapse? No. New York, 50 stories high. It burned for 6 hours. None of these have collapsed. They're all in use today, having been refurbished. And yet, on 9/11, these two small fires on one side of Building 7 are responsible for bringing this building down in 6.5 seconds. After burning all afternoon, it came down at five in the afternoon. If there again were fires on the other side, we'd expect the building to fall away from us and favor its injury, not come straight down. Again, buildings that collapse follow the path of least resistance, not straight down through themselves. It's completely diametrically opposed to every principle of structural engineering, which is designed to resist the forces of gravity. That structural engineers can identify with. Am I right? Where's my structural engineer? Government documentation. Well, we had 4 reports. Association of American Society of Civil Engineers, FEMA, Silverstein, Weidlinger, and NIST. Throughout each one of these reports, we have the same cast of characters coming and going through them. We're told that they were volunteers. But these volunteers were not volunteers like you go down to the PTA and say, I'll help out. These were highly paid defense contractors who had ongoing contracts with the federal government at $10 million annually. So they had a huge stake in producing a report that favored their client. This is not unbiased. We have the FEMA report with only $600,000 of funding up until 2004 or 5. That was the only report we had from the government, and compare that funding to $40 million for the Clinton Bill Clinton affair with Monica. So we're not looking at something, a serious effort to get at the truth here. NIST finally got a 3-year, $20 million project, which we're going to be taking a quick look at, which is an incredibly highly polished effort at concealing the truth. FEMA suggests, however, thank you very much, that the collapse of World Trade Center 7 had a small debris field as the facade was pulled downward, suggesting internal failure and implosion. Demolishing the building so that it collapses straight down into its own footprint requires such skill that only a handful of demolition companies in the world will attempt it. But thank God, fire did it on 9/11 without having to pay the demolition contractors. The specifics of the fires in World Trade Center 7 and how they caused the building to collapse remain unknown. This is after 3 years of study. We don't know what happened. Our best hypothesis, fire, then complete collapse, has only a low probability of occurrence. Further research, investigation, and analysis are needed to resolve this issue. Unfortunately, though, for investigators hoping to resolve the issue, the evidence had been completely destroyed by FEMA before it could be resolved. NIST had no steel from World Trade Center 7 to analyze. The 9/11 Commission, who was sworn to give us the complete, fullest possible account of the events surrounding 9/11, did not even mention the building in one page or one sentence of their 571-page report. Max Cleland, for this and other reasons, resigned from the commission, stating this is a national scandal. This investigation is compromised. Do we have a free fall speed of collapse? Well, here's a second-by-second drop of the building. With each passing second, the building drops faster. This indicates acceleration, which is due to gravity, and no resistance to that acceleration in the columns. You can plot the data on a graph of time over distance drop, and then you can lay a theoretical curve of free fall right over it, and it fits perfectly, indicating the columns were removed, which could only be done by explosives. Do we have expert corroboration? Well, here's the top European control demolition expert, Danny Juwenko. It starts from below. They've simply blown away the columns. This is a controlled demolition. A team of experts did this. This is professional work without a doubt. Okay? We have to deal with this. We can't go home and say, well, I'm not an expert in controlled demolition, so I don't really know what happened. This is why we have experts telling us what really happened. And indeed, just like in a court case, you'll have experts on every side of every issue. And you are the jury. You have to decide who's telling the truth and who's lying through their teeth. This is a responsibility of every one of us as citizens. In my opinion, the building, World Trade Center 7, was with great probability professionally demolished, says Hugo Bachmann, Professor Emeritus and former chairman of the Department of Structural Dynamics and Earthquake Engineering. Is there evidence of squibs in World Trade Center 7? Let's take a closer look in this side-by-side comparison of Building 7 to a known demolition. So we have Building 7 on the left and this known demolition on the right.
Edifici a danni da impatto. In ogni caso, non vi sono prove di demolizione controllata. I filmati portati a sostegno di questa tesi sono ingannevoli, perché mostrano...
Looks like they both come down in about 6 seconds. Building, look on the left, upper right corner, focusing in on those squibs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those are explosions. You have to deal with those explosions. This video is not fixed. Let's watch it again.
In ogni caso, non vi sono prove di demolizione controllata.
Before someone argues with you about what fire can or can't do to a building, you tell them, you watch this video,
rivelano invece un cedimento localizzato in un punto ben preciso, testimoniato.
And you tell me what those puffs of smoke are. There's no fire up in that corner. The video is not touched up. This is evidence suitable for a court of law, right from network television. Okay? Did I make my point? Is there molten metal, and why, found at the bottom of the World Trade Center? Let's listen to Mark Loiseau.
Mark Loiseau, the president of Controlled Demolition Incorporated, told the American Free Press that in the basements of the World Trade Center, where 47 central support columns connected to the bedrock, hot spots of literally molten steel were discovered more than a month after September 11th. These incredibly hot areas were found at the bottoms of the elevator shafts, down 7 basement levels. The molten steel was found 3, 4, and 5 weeks later when the rubble was being removed. He said that molten steel was also found at World Trade Center 7. The highest temperature was in the east corner of the South Tower, where a temperature of 1,377 degrees Fahrenheit was recorded. The molten steel in the basement was more than double that temperature.
And the reason is because the molten steel is down in the basement. Those were surface temperatures that NASA was reading. Now, up here, B and A, that's Building 7. Those temperatures are 1,340 degrees on the surface. any fire is probably at most about 1300 to 1400 degrees in the building. These are surface temperatures. Remember, that pile of building was about 7 or 8 stories tall. The surface temperature is coming through the pile 1300 degrees. That's why below the temperature must have been even much greater. There's plenty of evidence for molten metal. In fact, the fires get to be 1,200, 1,400, sometimes 1,800 degrees hydrocarbon fires. And by the way, that includes jet fuel fires. But molten metal, well, the salmon you see in this color is 1,500 degrees. The lemon color is 1,800 degrees, much hotter than a hydrocarbon fire can burn. Structural steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2,700 degrees. What produced this molten metal? NIST denies molten metal. FEMA denies that there's any molten metal. You're going to see more evidence of molten metal. Thermite produces molten metal at 4,500 degrees. What is thermite? We're going to find out. It's an incendiary cutting charge, which we found evidence at all three buildings we'll be seeing. This is previous molten metal, which is solidified. It's rust. It's not aluminum from any airplane. And aluminum doesn't rust. They call these meteorites. They found them all over the place, tons of this previously solidified.
Unusual artifacts to emerge from the rubble is this rock-like object that has come to be known as the meteorite.
This is fused element of steel, molten steel and concrete and all of these things all fused by the heat into one single element.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, and we're cutting away from this important DVD, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, because we have Richard Gage himself with us on the line. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Maya, and hello, Ralph.
Hello, Richard. Good to be with you.
We're so glad that you can be with us today. We've been listening to the section in 9/11 Blueprint for Truth about the controlled demolition of World Trade Center 7. And this important DVD, as you know, is being offered as a premium for WBAI listeners. And I want to remind our listeners right now, before we go on to our conversation with Richard Gage, that you can call 212-209-2950 and make your contribution for $75 to listener-supported radio and have for your very own 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, this remarkable two-hour presentation, methodical in its detail. You cannot come away with any other conclusion that the official fiction is just that, fiction, that the World Trade Center Twin Towers and WT7 came down by a prepared, controlled demolition. You'll want to have this DVD for your very own so that you can show your friends, your colleagues, anyone who is willing to have any notion of the truth, to change their perceptions, to fortify their own understanding. $75 contribution, 212-209-2950. Richard, with all your more than 20 years of experience, how did you come to devote so much time to understanding the subject and also, most importantly, to organizing other engineers and architects?
Well, I was shocked quite a bit on my way to a construction site about 16 months ago when I heard on public radio, thank God for public radio, because I wouldn't know about the World Trade Center demolitions at all, probably, if it weren't for public radio. Out here in the San Francisco Bay Area, we have KPFA, and Guns and Butter showed a great interview with David Ray Griffin, in which he was talking about all of this evidence for controlled demolition, and I had never heard any of it before, not once from the mainstream media or any other media I was hearing. So I was so shocked I had to pull over, because they were talking about 20-ton beams being hurled 500 feet out of the World Trade Center mushrooming cloud at 45 miles an hour, their ends dripping with this molten metal that you just heard all about. And the concrete in each of the 110 floors being pulverized to dust. It went on and on and on. The first responders talking about the evidence of sights and sounds of explosions, 118 of them of the recorded 1,000 oral histories that the city of New York recorded. I couldn't believe it. I just never heard it before. I had to pull over, and I was in shock, and that prompted me to find out if this was true. I spent months researching on the Internet, where you can get an awful lot of great information on this subject. Just Googling 9/11 conspiracy actually will bring this up. The official conspiracy, turns out it doesn't hold any water wherever you look in the official story, including the 9/11 Commission report. So I knew what I had to do. There's pilots for 9/11 Truth. There were scholars for 9/11 Truth. There's the umbrella organization, if you will, 911truth.org. I just knew that we have to assemble the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. And there were a few that were already.
It's very important to involve engineers and architects because you are the very people who design, construct, and do all the preparations, the analysis of what can be the impact of a jet plane hitting a skyscraper. Could you discuss some of this?
Yes. Well, the architects and engineers design the buildings. The contractors actually build them. This building, the twin towers, for instance, was built in order to accept a direct hit by multiple aircraft. Boeing 707 traveling 600 miles an hour, according to John Skilling, the chief structural engineer, and the building would still be there, even though the biggest problem, he says, is that the fuel would dump into the building. Well, the official story tells us that you know, none of that is true, that it wasn't designed to contain the fuel. Well, the fuel, as I mentioned in the DVD, is only burns at 1,500 degrees. Most of it was burned up outside the building, even per the official story, and the rest of it burned up in 10 minutes. Why did the building fall down, if you will, fall, I say loosely, after only 56 minutes in the case of the South Tower and 102 minutes in the case of the North Tower? Fires were burning out. We have firemen that reached up there, reached that level, the 78th floor, and they said they could put it out with two fires. Somebody pushed the button, and you have all of the evidence you're going to hear in this next segment for the Twin Towers being explosively demolished. The evidence is overwhelming.
Richard, in major historical events, such as the events of September 11th, 2001, or in such events as the assassinations of the Kennedy brothers or Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, as soon as you examine the physical evidence, the evidence of the actual occurrence, there's no reconciling the official fiction with the evidence itself, whether that pertains to the famous Bullet 399 in the killing of John F. Kennedy, or in the current circumstance, the violation of the laws of physics on September 11th, if we are to believe the official fiction. Specifically, as you have demonstrated, how is it possible for a building to collapse on its footprint at the speed of gravity based upon the pretended impact of an airplane and a hydrocarbon fire? Why do, as you indicate, the support columns not fall simultaneously? So the building topples over and not straight down, as is the case with non-controlled collapses, as you point out. How do steel beam frames and massive concrete in turn become molten steel and pulverized powder on the basis of a hydrocarbon fire? Thus the laws of physics were reversed on that particular day. And it's starting from that ABC premise of looking at reality concretely, specifically, that you have demonstrated beyond any possible question the fiction of the official story with respect to this event.
Well, what you have, That's a loaded series of questions there. Let me try to dissect them. The Twin Towers were built of 47 immense box columns surrounded by about 254 perimeter columns, the perimeter structure being over-designed by a factor of 20. The interior box columns, huge, immense box columns, almost solid steel at the base, in the corners, 52 inches by 22 inches, rising all the way to the top of this structure, continuously welded, 100,000 tons of steel, which is designed to resist the loads of gravity as well as wind and earthquake. And what you have then is a precipitating event at about the, there's about 20-story above the impact, and in the case of the North Tower, and all of a sudden there's a precipitating event, which is very clearly a set of explosions. But let's say it's not. According to the official theory, there's the column failure theory. A truss, a series of trusses overheated and pulled in the columns. Okay, but then you have this 20-story building crushing this 80,000 tons of structural steel underneath, which is designed to resist it at virtually free fall speed. That's a non sequitur. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. This is sixth grade physics, actually. You put a 20-story building about 1,000 feet above the ground, and next to it you put a 20-story building above the rest of the building, which is 80 stories below it, and you drop each one. Which one's going to hit the ground first? Well, the one without any resistance, of course, and it will fall at free fall speed. The other one cannot fall at free fall speed. There's just no question about it. And as far as the production of molten metal, this is absolutely there's no answer for it. And that's why NIST and FEMA deny that there was any molten metal, and yet we have first responders, the World Trade Center structural engineer himself describing molten metal flowing at a conference in Utah. He said this 21 days after the attacks, and first responders are saying it's flowing like lava down the channel rails. Many people talk about it. We have photographs of molten metal, bright orange and yellow, flowing out of the South Tower just prior to its collapse. Where did all this come from? Well, it's not produced by the fire. Fires are 1,500 degrees, as I mentioned, and we're talking about 2,700 degrees. Well, the byproduct of an aluminothermic reaction is indeed molten iron, the byproduct of thermate. And we know it's thermate because there's sulfur found in the residue by physics professor Stephen Jones. And he has done several tests on several different items that were sent to him, and he found the exact chemical signature of thermate that you find in a classic thermite aluminothermic reaction with traces of aluminum, zinc, barium, and more greater amounts of manganese and fluorine. Fluorine, of course, being the oxidizer in aluminothermic reactions, or a major oxidizer. And then sulfur, which lowers the melting point of steel. So it's absolutely classic. And in addition, all of the dust, which was from the pulverized concrete, which is a whole nother subject. How did all that concrete get pulverized? Because it's not found down at the bottom of the Twin Towers. There's only a couple of stories of structural steel and aluminum cladding found at the bottom of these towers. But how, in all of this dust that's found everywhere, we have these tiny little microspherals of previously molten iron, almost perfectly round. And so how did they get in all the dust? I mean, I've got this dust. You can put a magnet, and they come right up to the magnet. Well, there were thousands of thermite cutter charges placed on all the columns and beams in order to cut them, which is, by the way, the only way the Twin Towers can come down at free fall speed, then you would have the byproduct, this molten thermite, and the explosiveness that we see would spray or atomize this liquid molten thermite or iron into tiny pieces, and they would cool as the surface temperature forms perfect spheres. And this is how all of that was formed. And it, again, has all the chemical trace signatures of classic thermite.
Richard, one question about this. Surely what you're pointing out here, as Stephen Jones did, that the temperatures that are reached by jet fuel-induced hydrocarbon fire cannot physically compromise steel in this fashion, whereas thermite, which is an additive, can reach those precise temperatures that will induce the condition that the actual circumstances that are called out by the officialdom cannot provide.
That's correct.
Brothers and sisters, as you have been hearing, both from the excerpt from the DVD and in the conversation with Richard Gage, this is a premium. This is a DVD that you must have. Must have. That's what Ralph and I have saying. That was the conclusion, and that is why we are presenting today 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, for your contribution of $75 to WBAI. 212-209-2950. We want to continue speaking with Richard, who's taken time from his work to be with you today. Please get on your phone, 212-209-2950. Support WBAI. Remember, it is on Pacifica that you get an opportunity to learn the true facts about 9/11, to learn the true facts about events throughout the world, as you hear week after week over the past 6 years on Taking Aim. Please, 212-209-2950. This is so exciting. It's been a real eye-opener, and we thank you so much, Richard. We're going to continue discussing for a few minutes more before we go back to the DVD. And then we'll be back with Richard again at 5:30. 212-209-2950.
Richard made the point, brothers and sisters, that it is through public radio, through listener-supported radio.
Right, not that the, NPR.
That the evidence,
that the evidence
came to Richard's attention. Think about the significance of what Richard is saying to you. He himself, an authority, a professional in the field, required public broadcasting, specifically specific radio, to access the elementary factors that pertain to this event. This is not a spectator sport, brothers and sisters. We're engaged in attempting to uncover a massive crime at the hands of our rulers that targets our own population. And the evidence is there in the work that Richard has provided, and it is through public access radio, through Pacifica specifically, that this information has been made available and is now being made available for you, because we want you equipped. We want you as self-starters. We don't want you quoting authority. We want you assimilating the data and making it your own. That is the way change occurs. That's the way people get mobilized. That's the function of free speech radio, to not merely get the truth out, but to make it an instrument for fundamental change. And that's the incredible importance of this DVD and of the effort and tireless effort that Richard has brought to bear to bring this truth to a wide array of people who will be activated to make change, to overcome.
And Richard, I have to say, over the years, not only through our presentations, but listening very carefully time and again to the presentations of the 9/11 researchers and scholars, I have to say, your DVD, your lecture, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, puts the physical evidence in the most concise and methodical and
compelling
and easy to absorb presentation I have heard yet. It is an absolute must for everybody, and I've listened to it many times, and I'm still learning more and more. And the incredible diagrams that you present, the flow chart, it really makes everything easy to accept, to absorb, to understand.
And
it puts all the elements in place. 212-209-2950. Brothers and sisters, this is a must-have. $75 contribution to WBAI.
I really do appreciate your compliment, and I guess I actually want to take it to the next level, too, because We now have 195 architects and engineers on our website, ae911truth.org, which are demanding a new investigation as a result of my bringing this information to their attention. And that could, that's a huge pile of credibility that is going to open the eyes around and in Congress and wake up other people. And that would never have happened without free speech, public radio. I mean, so I completely appreciate your point there. Everyone who sees, virtually everyone, there's always one or two in a crowd, like in San Diego this weekend. I was down there presenting this material, and virtually everyone in the audience, I always ask for a show of hands, who believes that controlled demolition brought these buildings down? Almost every hand went up. Who believes the official story? I have one hand. It's just amazing. Once people see this from beginning to end, they have no choice but to acknowledge that this difficult reality, this inconvenient truth, is it can only be true.
I'm glad you cited the inconvenient truth, Richard, because that actually comes from the autobiography of Bertrand Russell, who spoke of what he called inconvenient truths, expressive of a lifetime of dissent, of intellectual challenge to officialdom. It is the galvanizing understanding that the inconvenient truth is that which liberates, that which challenges orthodoxy, unwarranted assertions by those in authority.
212-209-2950. Please get on your phone now. Call while you're listening to our conversation and also while you're listening to the DVD. Remember, as you call, this will be yours. And those of you who put this on your MasterCard or Visa, you will be getting this right away. Richard has been kind enough to send ahead of time to WBAI many copies of 9/11 Blueprint for Truth. So is within a very short time of your having made your pledge on your credit card, this will be in your home. No delay. So remember, 212-209-2950. It's a rare occasion when we offer other people's work. As you know, here on Taking Aim, we have so much to say ourselves, and this was one time we said, this is an absolute must. It was a must for us, and it's a must for you. We really have to say that to you time and again. 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction. Those of you who are listening overseas, this is the time for your overseas telephone call. Remember, people in 77 countries listen to Taking Aim and more. So please, 212, the code for the United States is 1. So 1-212-209-2950. Some will be eagerly be there to take your call. $75 premium, credit cards accepted. You can make a pledge. You can pay over time. There are so many ways you can contribute to WBAI.
You know, in our last broadcast, brothers and sisters, we had emails and calls from everywhere from St. Petersburg to Oslo, sometimes from Beijing, from Accra. I mention this because Richard had been telling us when we were speaking to him recently that the organization that he heads is actually targeting as many as 1,000 architects and engineers to join in the significant work. Now, think about the impact of professionals. People who have made it their life's work to study precisely the nature of the composition of structures and who have the credentials and the training and the experience to understand and analyze the
and design
the specifics of the physical evidence pertaining here.
And oversee the construction.
Engineers and architects and professionals across the world who are within range of our voice, please. Join this effort. This is an international effort, brothers and sisters. It's not confined to architects or engineers within the United States. We urge you to contact Richard Gage, to contact architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, to join in this effort across this planet, because the cumulative impact of those of us who see the evidence, who can transmit the evidence, and are committed to organize around that evidence will produce change, will produce the expose and the, if you like, the the downfall of those responsible for these criminal acts.
And Richard, what has been the response? You're going around the country speaking. Your life has been transformed by this research.
Yeah, it's true. I just mentioned San Diego. We had a packed room of 200, and virtually every hand agreeing with our conclusion. We're going to Hartford, Connecticut, November 1st, and then after that, it's Austin and Houston, and then Tulsa and Tucson on the beginning of December, and then mid-December, I think it's the 15th or 16th, we're going to be in Boston. So it's a crazy schedule, and so far it's really overwhelming. I mean, people just have their jaws dropped because they had never heard this. I mean, I hear all kinds of excuses. Well, I would have heard about it by now if it were true. Well, that shows you the degree of control that our media exerts. I mean, I think there's something like four corporations that control 60% or 90% of the media, and guess who sits on those boards of directors, people from the defense, the oil industry, and insurance industry and banking industry. They all sit on each other's boards. We're highly controlled, and I don't think people have, other than your regular listeners at Taking Aim, of course, have an idea of this.
Richard, that's so well put and so fundamental, because after all, we like to describe on Taking Aim, we have 1% of the population that owns more than 95% of the rest of us combined. There was this famous figure, Robert Townsend, who was the president of Avis and American Express, who wrote a book called Up the Organization, that he calculated approximately 5,000 people control what he called the commanding heights of the U.S. economy. They average about 14 corporate directorships per individual person. And, of course, media are integral within these conglomerates. That's why information is controlled, and that's why free speech radio is the predicate of learning the truth and being able to arm ourselves with information and to follow the example of Richard Gage. Richard Gage is one of the world's soldiers for justice, and what he's doing is essential to all of us. Please support this work, brothers and sisters.
If you're just tuning in now for 5 o'clock when Taking Aim is regularly broadcast, this is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in the tri-state region of New York and on the internet, importantly, reaching people throughout the world at www.wbai.org. We have a very special program today for the WBAI Fall Fun Drive. We're presenting excerpts from the remarkable two-hour DVD presentation by Richard Gage, an AIA architect who's been an architect for over 20 years with major construction projects, designing and overseeing the construction of major projects. 9/11, Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, which describes in great and convincing detail why the collapse of the World Trade Center Twin Towers and Building 7 were a controlled demolition. We also have, fortunately, with us Richard Gage in conversation and interview, and he'll be back again with us after we play another excerpt of the DVD. In the first excerpt, Richard discusses the collapse of Building 7, and in this next excerpt, we'll hear a portion. Remember, you can only hear a portion today about the collapse of the Twin Towers. This is a $75 premium for your donation to WBAI 212-209-2950. I've been hearing the phones. I want to continue hearing the phones throughout the excerpt we're going to play next. 212-209-2950. Richard, you've been telling us where you're going and some of the response, but what about the response of the architects and engineers who you meet?
We had the first presentation I did to the architecture firm in Walnut Creek, 15 people came. 14 of them are signed up on my site.
Walnut Creek's in California. Richard's an architect in Berkeley.
Yes, I'm in Berkeley. And so this is a 95% success rate, I would suppose.
Fabulous.
Next, I did another presentation at a larger firm in Berkeley, and we have had 38 people come, and we now have over 16 of them signed up, and we're working on the rest.
I have to tell you, I'm sorry to interrupt, that's a major success rate. Having been around engineers a good part of my life, I can tell you they are tough folks to convince.
Yes,
good for you.
Thank you.
Maya's father was the chair of the physics department at the New York Institute of Technology, and you know, these are not people that you convince with just casual conversation, brothers and sisters. These are people who are trained to look at evidence, who are skeptical by training, and when you bring them on board, it's because you have presented overwhelming and massive evidence that leaves no room for doubt.
And that's what you have in this two-hour presentation, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, yours for a basic contribution to WBAI, $75. 212-209-2950. Remember, it's the premium and your membership and all that goes along with your membership and empowerment to be part of the WBAI community. Richard, thanks so much. I think it would be good to start playing a little bit more. You can go back to work, and you'll come back to have further conversation with us, and this time about the collapse of the Twin Towers.
You betcha. Thank you, Maya.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks, Ralph.
Michael, shall we go to the next excerpt of the 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction? This is the section that begins the discussion of the collapse of the Twin Towers. And then remember, keep dialing 212-209-2950, and we'll be back with you. And also, fortunately, with Richard to continue our conversation.
Okay, Maya, thank you very much, and thanks to Richard Gage. We'll be back with Richard in about 30 minutes or so. We just want to take a moment to thank a couple of callers. The phones have been ringing, as you heard, Ralph and Maya. We want to thank Craig Harris from Somerset, New Jersey, Lawrence Traynor from Colts Neck, New Jersey, Dave Mack from Fairfield, Connecticut, Nicholas Martielli from Huntington, New York, Benjamin James Jr. from Brooklyn, New York, Wayne Walcott from Brooklyn, New York as well, Patricia Whalen from Milestone, New Jersey, and Thomas C. DeVugas from the Bronx. Those people calling in and wishing to have their names read over the air, thanking them for participating on this special expanded edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. So we'll go back to the program. We'll go back. You can ask for Blueprint, and the folks in the tally room will know exactly what to organize and coordinate for you. And maybe we'll talk a little bit, Ralph, when we come back, as why we're listening to these beautiful melodic sounds of the whales in the background. We'll go back here on this special expanded edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
Let's take a look at the Twin Towers. Because the evidence, as great as it was for Building 7, is far greater for the Twin Towers. This was the crowning achievement of the international style, according to some, moronic gigantism, according to others, and heartless modernism. However you feel about the buildings, let's take a close look at how they were destroyed. These buildings surpassed the tallest building in the world at the time, becoming 1,368 feet high with a 12.5-foot floor-to-floor height. There were structural innovations, which I'll show you, in this unique building, 208 feet square, which allowed a complete open plan, 60 feet span in this direction and 35 foot span in this direction. All high rises after this time followed this innovation. It was actually quite incredible, and it worked quite well. We'll take a look, a close look at this structure. 11 million square feet. But almost immediately, we have difficulty renting the space. It took years to approach full occupancy with undesirable office space, gun-slit windows, low ceilings. It was subsidized financially, finally, by the tenancy of Governor Rockefeller, who put his entire state offices in there of 20,000 employees. The building was a disaster financially in the first decade. They had difficulties renting it, and it was required numerous renovations in the first decade as well. $200 million for asbestos removal, which became a hot issue almost immediately upon its construction. $800 million for rebuilding electrical communications and cooling systems. And galvanic corrosion was endemic, eating away at the connection between the structural steel and the aluminum cladding around the outside. The Port Authority denied permits for controlled demolition on several occasions due to the asbestos content, which would have been released into the atmosphere. Were they going to tear it down and rebuild it? It would have cost $5.6 billion to take it down to its structure with the scaffolding, somewhere up to $15 billion, some say. They were basically condemned structures. Nevertheless, 3 months prior to 9/11, we have a transfer of ownership with a 99-year lease to Larry Silverstein, transferring all of this real estate to him and his partners. For $3.2 billion, Larry, I believe it's now $125 million of his own money he invested. And why would he do this if it was going to take $5.6 billion to $15 billion to repair it? Did he have some knowledge that he was going to be assisted in his demolition effort? The lease he signed had an all-important escape clause. If the buildings are struck by an act of terrorism, the new owner's obligations under the lease are void. This is extremely unusual, I am told. I'm not an expert in leases. Maybe some of you are. As a result, the owners are not required to make any payments under their lease. We'll be able to collect the insurance, and indeed Silverstein is on his way to collecting $7 billion. He's got $4.6 already. The insurance companies made out as well. You might feel sorry for them under the circumstances. They raised their premiums over 2,000%. They came out smelling like a rose. In its place, the Freedom Tower is scheduled to rise to 1,776 square feet and will be a major profit center for Larry and the Port Authority as well. The Twin Towers were very unique at the time, with a dense grid of up to this time, these buildings had a dense grid of steel, as you can see, and or concrete frames all the way through the building, every 30 feet or so. The Twin Towers were built as a tube structure with this very strong, dense mesh of steel surrounding the exterior, acting as a bearing wall and to resist all the lateral forces. Inside was the core, a dense grid of 47 immense steel box columns, 4-inch thick at the base and 2-inch thick at mid-height, narrowing to a 1/4-inch thick at the height at the top. Prefabricated floor assemblies with 20-gauge steel deck over 29-inch deep steel web joists were topped with 4 inches of reinforced concrete, all of which was completely pulverized on 9/11. We'll be looking for evidence of these 110 pancakes at the bottom of the Twin Towers. The trusses were welded and bolted to the beams at the core and also at the spandrel panels at the perimeter bearing wall. So these were solidly constructed buildings. They were not designed to pancake, as you may have heard ludicrously mentioned by some, with 47 steel core columns and 240 perimeter columns. The perimeter structure was over-designed with a ratio of 20 to 1 because this was a new structure and they weren't taking any chances. The steel frame is a 100,000-ton heat sink. any 1,400 degree fire, as was alleged, or 1,800 degree in some cases, alleged to have occurred near the core columns, would have been absorbed and dissipated through this incredible heat sink. But as we'll see, temperatures of such, there's no evidence for these temperatures whatsoever, even so. So you can see at the base, this incredible core column is almost solid steel, and they're rising up, 47 of them here, and these are the metal decks and the perimeter columns with the spandrel panels, all capped by a hat truss, which serves to tie the perimeter and the core columns together, as well as support the massive concrete antenna, which was 300 feet high. Let's take a look and see what the imperative was for jetliner proofing the building.
John Skilling and Les Robertson were the structural engineers who designed the streamlined steel frames of the Twin Towers in the 1960s. Because a wayward Army bomber flew into the Empire State Building in 1945, the towers were built with skyscraper crashes in mind.
The airplane we were envisioning was the largest airplane of its time, flying slowly and low, lost in the fog. We designed the buildings to take the impact of the Boeing 707 hitting the building at any location.
The Boeing 707, by the way, has a kinetic energy equal to that of the 767, which hit the Twin Towers on 9/11, because the 707 flies much faster, 500 miles per hour versus 400 for the 767. I believe those figures are correct. So you can look at that calculation on Jim Hoffman's site, 911research.com. So what does John Skilling say? The World Trade Center structural engineer over Leslie Robertson. The biggest problem would be the fact that all the fuel would dump into the building. And if that happened, there'd be a fire. So this was taken into account by the words from John Skilling's mouth himself. Now, both FEMA and NIST acknowledged that the impacts virtually did nothing to the structural integrity of the building. They stood for 56 minutes and 102 minutes, respectively, after their initial impacts. And the building swayed. They came to a stop. The forces were routed around the impact. And FEMA, of course, says, well, what happened was the fireproofing was knocked off. That made the steel vulnerable to the intense fires. We'll be taking a look at that allegation. Let's look at the drawings that we get from PBS Nova and FEMA. Quite deceptive illustrations. In this case, we see a bunch of pancakes stacked up, ready to fall down, with no core columns. There's this effort to deny that there was a core in these buildings by the 9/11 Commission itself, which said the core was a hollow steel shaft, by these, which really try to sell something to the American people. Reminds me of some of the mortgage advertisements I get in my mail with these low interest rates and low payments. It's a total deception. In the case of the trusses, they're not shown with their cross bridging. They're not shown with the steel decking, which is topped with 4 inches of concrete, all of which goes to support it. We don't see a core in the case of this drawing until you read the fine print and realize that, oh yeah, one's a core column and one's a perimeter column, and we're talking about the span between them. And in this drawing on the upper left here, you see a fairly representative example of how the columns in the core align fairly orthogonally in line and are represented according to their scale. But in the FEMA and NIST drawings, you see them almost the scale of toothpicks, or about the same size as the perimeter columns, which are 14 inch by 14 inch square. Remember, these columns are, corner columns are 52 inches by 22 inches. And the other ones, not in the corner, are 30 inches by 16 inches, completely shown out of scale here and randomly placed instead of orthogonal. So there's a whole distortion effort. The drawings for the World Trade Center were recently leaked from somebody in the world, in a Silverstein-Weidlinger report, we have them now on our site, ae911truth.org. You can download them. You can look at all the floors. And here's an example of the 66th floor, which shows the correct columns here. This is the core that I've zoomed in on now. Core columns are very large and orthogonally arranged, just like that diagram you saw earlier. So what the theory is the first theory is the pancaking theory, where the truss became disconnected from the exterior columns one by one and zippered all the way around the building, causing this pancake collapse. The next theory that NIST came up with after they threw that one out is that, no, they blame the persistence of these connections between the truss and the exterior columns, because as the truss heated up from the fire, it sagged up to 42 inches, we're told, which turns out to be a crock, and pulled in the perimeter columns, causing them to buckle and fail. Either way, it doesn't add up at all, and it ignores all of the demolition evidence that you're about to see. Now, when we go to show the demolition for the Twin Towers, it's out of the range of our experience, because controlled demolitions typically have not been from the top down, so we don't have a frame of reference from which to view this. So what if somebody was going to blow up the World Trade Center and blame it on jet plane impacts? You'd start at the location of the jet impact and work your way downward. And indeed, that's what we see. Let's take a look and compare this to a typical controlled demolition, because there are some key differences. We have a rapid onset of destruction, but not at the base, up at the location of the jet impacts. We have a straight down symmetrical collapse, not into its own footprint, but blown outside its own footprint. We'll take a close look. And all the columns are cut on a floor at once. They're not so much cut as cut and then blown laterally. We're going to take a close look at what that means. Otherwise, there are very similar features. Let's start with the sights and sounds produced by explosions. This is Jim Hoffman.
The way I describe what happened to the towers is that they were, I don't think you can get around calling these explosions. They exploded into these clouds of dust with, you know, steel hurling in all directions. And these explosions became 500 feet in diameter by the time they reached the ground, actually more like 800 feet in diameter. But the reason I think people don't think of them as explosions is because they occurred over a period of 15 seconds in either case. So there wasn't a particularly, like, normally people think of an explosion as you hear a loud crack, a bang, and then it's just that one event. But if you have, in the case of a demolition where you might have thousands of explosions that are all blending in, then you get one huge explosive event, but you don't hear any distinct explosions that's so much above the roar of it. The thing sounded like sort of like an ocean wave, just this incredibly loud roar. But incredibly explosive. The tops, I described them as mushrooming, because they blew up so far.
Well, we have lots of witnesses, because the New York Times sued the city of New York and gained access by a state court of appeals to the oral histories, which the city of New York was denying any access to, and you'll see why. There's over 118 quotes. I won't read them all to you. We felt the ground shake. You could see the tower sway, and then it just came down. The ground shook, then it came down. All of a sudden, the ground just started shaking. I thought I heard an explosion. It actually shook my bones. Shortly before the first tower came down, I remember feeling the ground shaking. I heard a terrible noise, and then debris just started flying everywhere. Heard the noise, and then debris started flying everywhere. Let's take a look and listen to what the news reporters say
initially, and then you never hear again after the first day.
We've heard reports of secondary explosions after the aircraft impacted.
The entire building has just collapsed, as if a demolition team set off. When you see the old demolitions of these old buildings, it folded down on itself.
Anybody who's ever watched a building being demolished on purpose knows that if you're going to do this, you have to get at the under infrastructure of a building and bring it down.
Like, it sounded like gunfire, you know, bang, 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 and then all of a sudden, three big explosions.
At 10:30, I tried to leave the building, but as soon as I got outside, I heard a second explosion, and another rumble, and more smoke, and more dust. I ran inside the building, the chandelier shook, and again, black smoke filled the air. Within another 5 minutes, we were covered again with more silt and more dust. And then a fire marshal came in and said we had to leave because if there was a third explosion, this building might not last.
It was an heavy-duty explosion.
Someone saw secondary explosions and then subsequent collapses.
The full impact was seen in the moment in time. My colleague Stephen Evans, who was in the Trade Center and was interviewed just after the first explosion.
There was another big, big explosion in the other tower. Flames coming out in this billowing gray smoke.
How many of you heard about explosions in the World Trade Center before you became aware of these recently from 9/11 Truth Movement? 1, 2, 3, 4. So there were some reports that got out. What did the New York Fire Department guys say?
What did we do?
We made it outside. We made it about a block.
We made it at least two blocks, and we started running. Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was not, if they had detonated.
Detonated.
If they were planning to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
All the way down. I was watching it and running.
Just ran up west.
And then you just saw this cloud of shit chasing you down.
Couldn't outrun it.
I jumped behind a battalion car. I hit under the car. I was waiting to die.
He saw a number of brief light sources being emitted from inside the building between floors 10 and 15. It seemed like on television when they blow up these buildings, it seemed like it was going all the way around like a belt, all these explosions. I saw low-level flashes. Somewhere around the middle of the World Trade Center, there was this orange and red flash coming out. I thought the terrorists planted explosives somewhere in the building. That's how loud it was, crackling, explosive, a wall. With each popping sound, it was initially an orange and then a red flash coming out of the building. Pop, pop, pop. That's exactly what, because I thought that's what it was, an explosion. Suddenly there was another loud boom at the upper floors, and then there was a series of smaller explosions which appeared to go completely around the building at the upper floors, and another loud earth-shattering blast with a large fireball which blew out more debris. Flash, flash, flash. Then it looked like the building came down. Let's see what all these flashes and these sounds of explosions are from.
Buildings as they fall into their footprint. The tremendous billowing clouds of dust. Now let's look at the collapse of the Twin Towers. We are seeing explosions rather than implosions, a first in demolition history. A sequenced rumble becomes a roar as debris is thrown outward. The damage is not contained. Even the windows are blown from neighborhood buildings. What kind of energy enabled this? Would fire hurl metal and concrete sideways into the air? Here, a 600,000-pound chunk of steel, twice the weight of a Boeing airliner, was flung 400 feet, wedging itself deep into Three World Financial Center on Vesey Street. A photographer taking pictures of Ground Zero wondered why so many steel beams were jutting from neighborhood buildings. Watt shot pieces of the towers all the way across the street. In April 2006, New Yorkers were distressed to learn that bone fragments, human remains from 9/11, had been found on the roof of the nearby Deutsche Bank building.
And how, in God's name, did those fragments get there?
It surprised me that there was still bone fragments or human remains that had not been discovered.
How is it possible that after 5 years they're finally looking on the rooftops of the Deutsche building? I mean, that's crazy.
And bone fragments less than a centimeter long. How could they be so small?
Now, are you following along in your handout? We're like most of the way through the evidence of controlled demolition for the Twin Towers. That's the second handout, the first building one being Building 7. Look at the explosions on the right. Streamers shooting up and out with explosive force, thick billowing dust and smoke with pyroclastic or heat-induced cauliflower-formed clouds. Look at World Trade Center 1. Up and out. The geometry is similar to that of fireworks, where explosive force is going against gravity and in all directions symmetrically, up and out. It's been referred to like a banana peeling. Fire doesn't do this. Are all the columns cut and exploded at once? Let's take a look.
Words of a senior blaster.
We blow the basement, all the columns in the basement. Then we crack it up at the top to get it started. We go every other floor all the way down. Every explosive has a timer on it. That's why it's controlled. When the columns go, each floor goes down and impacts the one below and keeps going.
Here's what demolition experts use in steel-framed buildings. The linear-shaped charge.
It's a chevron-shaped or V-shaped charge that you can focus at a specific target, and it's lethal. It generates around 3 million pounds per square inch pressure at a speed, depending on the explosive, inside the shaped charge, in excess of 27,000 feet per second.
Well, do we have columns in the World Trade Center that show evidence of shaped charges?
Were the underground explosions intended to blow out the Twin Towers basements, followed by blasts heard inside the buildings of shaped charges slicing the core?
Because of the secondary explosion, we've got numerous people covered with dust from the secondary explosion.
Demolition pre-weakening usually takes place well in advance of the final blast. But at the World Trade Center, critical prep work might have had to occur in a very compressed time frame in the panicked aftermath of the plane strikes. These core columns were discovered after the collapse. The angled cut occurs in exactly the manner that shaped charges slice through steel beams to control the way they fall. Notice the hardened, once liquid metal. Was thermite used with the shaped charge?
The job of the shaped charge is to cut steel H-beams.
The way we do this is by cutting the beam at an angle, which through a series of beams cut at the same angle will tend to make the building shift over and walk.
More angled cuts from the World Trade Center steel. The shortest distance between two points is, anybody? Straight line. If you're...
This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, and we've been fortunate today to be listening to excerpts from 9/11 Blueprints for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, the remarkable two-hour presentation that was given in May at the University of Manitoba by Richard Gage, an AIA architect with over 20 years of experience in the design and overseeing the construction of very complicated buildings, schools, major facilities in California, Nevada, throughout the West. And Richard came upon, through listening to KPFA, sister station in Berkeley, the discussion of David Ray Griffin about the inconsistencies in the congressional investigation of 9/11, and through this, he launched his own precise and methodical investigation of the physical evidence, the demolition of World Trade Center Twin Towers, and Building 7, and came to the conclusion this had to be a controlled demolition, and he then took the major step of organizing architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. We've been fortunate to have this presentation as a premium for WBAI, $75 contribution. We want to thank all of you who have been calling, and we want you to get on the phone. This is the only time this is going to be available. 212-209-2950, your $75 contribution to listener-sponsored radio, your access to the truth, your access to organizing, your access to changing the world, to you, one in which it's in your interest and benefits you, your family, and friends. 212-209-2950. Richard will be back on the line with us in a minute or so. Meanwhile, I have to thank you, Richard. Thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. It's awesome to be here at WBAI.
Thank you, Richard. We want to say, by the way, that what this DVD and what Richard's organization of this evidence and this massive demonstration of the realities of the collapse of the World Trade Center towers and of Building 7, it integrates the data. It brings together the eyewitness testimony, the visual evidence of the plumes of smoke and the moment of the explosion, the testimony of the eyewitnesses and the firemen, the actual delineation of the events as they are unfolding. You hear the explosions, you see the explosions, you hear them described by the eyewitnesses as they occur, and then this massive array of data and the work of other colleagues that have been over the years contributing to this delineation of what occurred on September 7th are integrated within the framework of an architect and engineer's understanding of what is involved when the building is brought down.
Richard, I want to mention that on your website, ae911truth.org, you have presentations by the engineers themselves who have joined in and with this work. And I was struck by the comments of Edward Munyak, who's a mechanical engineer, works in fire protection here in California, specifically for the city of San Jose. And he said, I have collaborated with a research chemical engineer, and he has worked with NIST reports that positively show that the jet fuel contributed very little to the duration of the fires. And in fact, all of the fires were very weak in historical perspective. They were oxygen starved, as evidenced by the black smoke. If you dig deeper into the NIST reports, they confirm that the steel temperatures were low. And that he took this evidence and the work that he's been doing and the inspiration, and he has made presentations to major professional conference. And that showed that all three WTC collapses have no resemblance to any previous high-rise fire, and that computer simulations using finite element analysis goes through the whole step. And we have to really thank you for inspiring all this organizing and activity. It's going to have tremendous repercussions throughout the country.
I think so. What you're referring to is the lower left-hand corner of the main page. There's a series of technical articles, and they are exceptional. Another engineer cites a study that this 80,000 tons of intact structural steel would have arrested any pancaking almost immediately within a couple of floors because it is so strong. And even, let's say they're wrong by some factor, again, you would not have anywhere near a free fall speed of collapse. This is a component of classic controlled demolition, where you have to remove the columns on any given floor, synchronistically timed, floor by floor, starting with the interior and then going to the exterior columns. It's a precise science. Any mistakes in which will cause a building to fall over instead of straight down in a symmetrical collapse, which is what you see in the Twin Towers, not imploding in on itself like we saw at Building 7, but exploding. Everything is outside the footprint, everything, in a 1,200-degree radius. It's a complete destruction zone where each beam and column is separated from each other in 30-foot lengths, which are shippable. Remember, these were shippable on the 800 trucks a day that were being removing the debris to as fast as possible to go on to be recycled in China.
Now, you know, Richard, the fundamental issue here that you're opposing is that controlled demolition, namely the calculation of the amount of charge required, the specific location in which those charges will be placed, the integration between the detonation of one charge and another. This is a highly sophisticated and preparatory work which cannot be done in an instant. It has to be calculated, it has to be organized, it has to be controlled by those with authority. It is not something that can be done randomly. Even if you were bringing down a building in Atlantic City on its footprint or controlled demolition anywhere, it's a very sophisticated engineering and scientific undertaking. And with relation to the World Trade Center and the center of the financial district of New York City, this is not just a casual undertaking, surely.
How could they have gotten away with it without being seen, as you might be implying? Well, it turns out that there was an elevator modernization taking place in the 9 months prior to 9/11. Ace Elevator was retrofitting all of the elevators, and they were closed, locked, and guarded one at a time. So that would have given access, unimpeded access, to any number of dozens of men who could have planted these charges, because the core columns are all immediately adjacent to the elevators, and the shafts of the elevators were protected only by a couple of layers of gypsum board, and the columns as well. And this could be hacked through quite easily. This is standard sheetrock, much thicker though, than that we have in our homes. So this could easily have been done by a couple of dozen men over a course of several months. Now, how could they have gotten by security? Well, it turns out the security company was replaced about 6 months prior to 9/11. Securicom took over the security of the World Trade Center. And I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but the boards of directors on that company host Wirt Walker III and Marvin Bush, both closely related to George Bush.
Yes, this is what we call coincidence theory, right? We have here the concatenation events, which delineates means and opportunity and, above all, responsibility and control. You can imagine, brothers and sisters, as Richard is pointing out to you, that you're dealing here with security centers. You do not have access in any sustained way to the structure of major buildings in this fashion without the authorities and the security having to be involved in order to accomplish those objectives. You have in this presentation by Richard Gage not the physical evidence, the historical evidence, the eyewitness testimony, and the political analysis that allows it to be comprehended and for us to begin to see what is involved, who is responsible, and how it was achieved.
Now,
that is an extraordinary thing that is available to you in this DVD. I'm sorry, Maya, but I want to emphasize the integrative importance of this major work. Make it your own, brothers and sisters.
Right. I was just going to repeat the phone number, 212-209-2950. Brothers and sisters, Taking AIM listeners throughout the world, now is the moment to make your telephone call, 212-209-2950. This is an exclusive presentation here today on WBAI. Today only, so please don't think I'm going to get around to doing this tomorrow. make your call now, 212-209-2950. We're very fortunate to have Richard Gage with us. And most importantly, you're going to hear this DVD, you're going to watch this DVD, you're going to share this DVD, and you're all going to make the information your own. And as Richard says on his website, take an architect, take an engineer to lunch, take a friend, take someone to lunch, bring them to your home, invite them, show them this DVD, make this part of your life. You will be transformed just as Richard has been transformed. And remember, 212-209-2950. Richard, continue to tell us about some of the response of the engineers and how they then go on to do research for on their own.
Well, and first about transformation, most people don't know that I'm a Republican. I had a long way to turn around. I voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger out here in California. I voted for Ronald Reagan. I have to, I'm proud that at least I saw through Mr. Bush. But
this is a measure of what exposure to evidence and truth can do for people. And none of us came out of the womb, brothers and sisters, as revolutionists or as people who were challenging authority. We went through a lived experience, and that's what Richard is so critical in doing, is mediating our ideas through people's lived experience.
So, Richard, discuss what happened to you, because this is a major transformation.
Yeah, well, I was living a pretty good life. I had a good marriage, a great career in architecture, which I'm trying to hold on to both. This new activity takes over. It becomes imperative. Let's face it. If what we're talking about here today is true, the implications are absolutely staggering. Because we know Al-Qaeda didn't have access to these buildings, so it could only have been elements within our own government. And nobody's talking about it. Nobody's willing to look at it. The 9/11 Commission danced around it and allowed Zelikoff, the head of the commission, to completely take over, and who, by the way, has a PhD in making of public myth. Fascinating. Yes. Individual who had all the power on 9/11 Commission, which is why it's a complete whitewash. You can read more about that in David Ray Griffin's excellent treatise, 9/11 Commission Omissions and Distortions. Anyway, it's
great.
Taken over my life, and I'm working at least 40, 50 hours on this, this creating our nonprofit organization and going out and speaking to all these different cities and handling 100 emails. And I'm telling you, it's taking a toll on my wife and on my job. And what else can you do? Our country is under not just attack, but we're in the takeover stage.
And what Richard is expressing in his dedication and in his transformation is the compelling obligation upon all of us to make this evidence our own. Philip Zelikow, brothers and sisters, is not merely in relation to the cover-up of the events of September 11th. Philip Zelikow is a factor and a figure in the planned occupation of Iraq and the usurpation of its oil resources. Philip Zelikow also factors in with people like Max Holland of the Central Intelligence Agency with respect to the cover-up of the role of the Central Intelligence Agency in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. You know, when you have a seminal event such as the murder of, or the murder of the head of state, what I call treason at the top, you don't have an event of that occur happen in American history without enormous consequences for the society at large. As Malcolm once said, the chickens are coming home to roost. In 9/11, they did with a vengeance. All of us are now in the process of trying to integrate this reality, to understand all its import, and central to that is beginning with the evidence. When you start with the evidence, everything opens up. Richard is testimony to that, and Richard is not merely an architect of buildings, but an architect of the truth about a seminal event of our time. This is the evidentiary result of that. Please make it your own, brothers and sisters.
212-209-2950. Thanks to all of you who have been calling. I've been hearing the phones ringing off the hook. If someone isn't there to take your call, just be patient, and one of our wonderful volunteers in the WBAI conference room will get to you. 212-209-2950. Your contribution of $75, 9/11, Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, a remarkable two-hour presentation complete with an amazing PowerPoint display and video that incorporates and synthesizes the reasons why the collapse of the WTC Twin Towers and Building 7 are a controlled demolition. And this will, if you have any doubts, this DVD will certainly dispel it and transform your life just as it has, as the information and the research has done for Richard. Richard, continue to tell us about the work that you're doing with architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth and the discoveries that are being made even today.
Well, we did discuss the chemical evidence of the incendiary thermite in the dust of the World Trade Center that was produced and massively laid out and 4 inches thick across all of the roads in lower Manhattan. We talked about the chemical evidence in the slag as well, and the tons of molten metal that the chief investigation body, NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, has whitewashed with a 10,000-page, 3-year, $20 million study. They start at the point of the jet plane impacts into the tower, and then, for brevity, they say in this report, the analysis stops at the initiation of collapse. Well, that is absolutely incredible, because that's where everything begins after that. Their entire 10,000-page analysis stops before the building even falls down. Why? Because then they don't have to deal with any of this massive, overwhelming evidence for controlled demolition, which your listeners have been listening to, and they don't have to deal with the tons of molten metal and try to explain that. They don't have to respond to these squibs, which are explosions occurring at the lower levels, well 40, 60 stories below the ensuing floor collapse, if you will, more like demolition waves removing the columns up above. These squibs are highly focalized explosions occurring at the midpoint between the corners of the buildings, and they're expelling building contents and columns and concrete, and they occur at 160 to 200 feet per second. In other words, these are explosive speeds. They are not, as NIST later tells us in their answers to frequently asked questions, because everyone was asking them, why didn't you just even try to find out if this was a result of a controlled demolition? They say that these are puffs of air produced by the massive 20-story pile driver pushing down the rest of the building, and then the air's got to go somewhere, right? Well, first of all, that pile driver, as your listeners will see in the DVD, is destroyed itself within the first 4 seconds to nothing, and then all you see is the building tearing itself apart from the top down. And so there's no pile driver pushing air through these second of all, if let's say there was, the air would be filling this 60-foot or 35-foot open bay office space, and it would relatively uniformly blow out several windows at once, not just the highly focalized explosions right in the middle. And so it's just ludicrous. Wherever you go in their explanation, it makes no sense. And even fire protection engineers and the head of NIST himself, Dr. Quintier, is demanding, and that's the head of NIST's fire science division, demanding a new investigation. there's a number of people demanding a new investigation. Scientist, world-renowned scientist Lynn Margolis, and you have Joel Hirshhorn demanding a new investigation. Great number of people.
And Richard, let's remind everyone again, 212-209-2950 for your $75 contribution to WBAI, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth. Just say blueprint to the person who's taking your call. The Architecture of Destruction, a step-by-step analysis of why it was controlled demolition that brought down the World Trade Center Twin Towers and Building 7. And please visit ae911truth.org. Distribute this information to your friends, your family, and get out the word, 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Yes, I want to suggest, brothers and sisters, that we adopt an old method of struggle coming from the time of the anti-nuclear movement and the struggle against the war in Vietnam, namely the chain letter principle. Make it your responsibility to contact five people and to ask each of those five to take responsibility individually to contact another five. In five stages, you reach 3,000 people, brothers and sisters. Let's get the word out. Let's get the DVD purchased. Let's get Architects and Engineers for Truth proliferating across the United States. We are part of this effort. This is our mutual effort. This is not, as I said earlier, a spectator sport. You have here the critical evidence integrated and mobilized and presented in an eloquent manner by a professional, by Richard Gage. Make it your own, brothers.
And that's a good point, Ralph. If you can contribute more than $75, please, 152 copies and more, make this an important time for you to open your pocketbook and contribute to WBAI for this unique and important synthesis of the information of the physical evidence that shows why the collapse of the World Trade Center was not caused by airplanes manned by people who don't even know how to fly planes going into the World Trade Center, and instead it was a controlled demolition, pre-planned, and as Richard said, something that was staged over many, many months. 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, for your contribution, $75 or more. For more copies, to WBAI 212-209-2950. I'd like to mention again that Richard has kindly sent already to WBAI copies of 9/11 Blueprint for Truth. If you can pay by credit card, your copy will be on its way to you very, very soon. Ralph, last, and Richard, last words before we have to break for the WBAI news, which comes every day to you at 6 o'clock. Richard?
I want to make sure that your listeners tell everybody they know, and in this chain letter, ask them, where do they think the 700 bone fragments that were a half an inch long, human bone fragments, found on the top of the Deutsche Bank building across the street, one half an inch long, where did they come from? I mean, they were identified as being from the victims, but how did they get there, and why were they so small? That's a key question that everybody has to struggle with. And once you do, you find that it's one part of the massive, overwhelming evidence that these buildings were destroyed by explosives.
Richard, we thank you so much. Take to heart what you've just heard, brothers and sisters, and out of not merely respect, but out of allegiance, out of solidarity, out of being part of the struggle, respond to what Richard Gage has brought to us and make this evidence your own in the process of supporting free speech radio. It's about our liberation, brothers and sisters. Please join in the struggle.
And continue to call once we're off the air, 212-209-2950. Two announcements will be on next week, continuing a discussion of 9/11. And also, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, mark the date, October 30th. Ralph and I are speaking with Frank Morales at the Unitarian Church. And please contact us at www.frankmorales.com. takingaimradio.com or at our email, takingaim@packbell.net, for more information.
Which is about, brothers and sisters, 9/11 and the preparations for martial law. Because those in authority who brought us 9/11 are taking our rights as well. Please join in that effort, support what Richard K. Gage has done, and make this DVD your own. Thank you so much.
For Ralph Shoneman and Maya Shone, this has been Taking Aim. We're so glad you've been with us. Please keep the phones off the hook. I mean, dialing 212-209-2950. We'll be with you next week.
And again, our thanks to Richard Gage.
Thank you very much, Ralph Shoneman and Maya Shone, and thank you very much to Richard Gage. That website is AE911truth.org, and the music in the background, well, in the foreground was the music of the sounds from humpback whales out in the Pacific Ocean. And Ralph Shoneman, is his birthday is today. We want to wish Ralph a very happy birthday. And Maya took him out to the Farallon Islands on the Pacific Ocean on Sunday. So we want to wish him a happy birthday today.